We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
How about I go ahead and address the larger than average elephant in the room?
No, I have never coached the sport that you folks call football. And heck, you could fill two internets with what I don't know about football.
Hold on now. If I were to get fired from my job where I'm putting cleats in the trunk of my car.
You got the boot for putting boots in the boot.
I love that. You know what the happiest animal on earth is? It's a goldfish. You know why?
No.
Got a 10-second memory. Be a goldfish, Sam.
All right, welcome back to Big Screen Sports Podcast, where all movies are sports movies. I am your host, Kyle Bandujo. We are at episode 5 of season 3 of Ted Lasso. Me, Alex McDaniel, Caroline Darney breaking it down for you tonight. Before we get into that, I want to shout out our Big Screen Sports Patreon group for supporting the show, especially our Big Chill producer level patrons, some of which you will hear from tonight in written form, submitted some questions for this episode. That is Aaron Figueroa, Mike Schubert, Steve Rogers, Kevin Frost, Mike D, Ryan Yeager, Mike Dries, Chris Mikoski, John Craig, Sam Smith, Zach Rich, Jason Alba, Stephen DeBoe, Dan McFall, Kevin Inkelman, Mac Lindsay, and Classic Stadium Fire. Big thanks to them, all of our patrons, for supporting this show, helping us keep the lights on over here at Big Screen Sports. And big thanks to those who submitted some questions for this episode of Ted Lasso. Really good one. A lot of questions in general that come on from this one. And I will say, I want to again shout out the patrons. We are going to be doing our first live watch of a movie later this month, later in April. So if you're a member of the Patreon group, tune in for that. We'll have some updates in the Patreon soon. If you're not a member of the Patreon group, want to participate, patreon.com/bigscreensports. As for this episode of Ted Lasso, if you're listening to it the day it drops, this is obviously not coming out when the last episode came out. Friday will be the day that we drop these moving forward if they stop releasing screeners early. I kind of clarified this last week, but this will be kind of the new status quo moving forward. Friday, Ted Lasso. Unless we do get the episode early, then we'll try to get it out a little bit earlier. So with that, here's me, Alex, Caroline, talking season 3, episode 5 of Ted Lasso, Signs. All right, joining me on Big Screen Sports tonight, it is my co-host Alex McDaniel and Caroline Darney. So glad we're all back, and I want to open this episode by asking y'all, if you were pissed off at a former employer, what animal would you leave in their conference room?
Oh, man.
Not naming any employers, of course.
Why would you ask us this question? Caroline, do we share a former employer? I would do a fox with an F, not a V.
I would choose a raccoon.
Oh, that's going to cause some hell.
Yeah.
I think I would go with a rat because they'll chew through wires and shit.
That's true. The lamb was such a nice touch. It really was.
It was
a great callback by her. Petty enough, had a nice little pun to go with it. Honestly, that was probably one of the better savvy moves that Shandy made over her career.
Yeah.
When it came to thinking things through, I mean, but not, you know.
Gotta assume that all of her breakups have been get the popcorn out. Let's watch them.
Talk about
go
Keith
down.
Morrison.
Oh.
Oh, has a long history of boyfriends disappearing. It's been a while, sorry.
Yeah, it has. We haven't talked a movie in quite some time. We got to talk about that when we're done with this. Before we get into it, though, what's going on at For the Win and Bet For the Win?
Content. I don't know.
Some content.
Caroline and I are the only editors working this week because it was just one of those weird weeks where like the rest of the editors are out for various reasons. I'm just exhausted. Yeah. But there's content.
There's content. There's lots of fun content.
If you go to the website, I'm pretty sure there's stuff up.
I got to write about Grogu getting his little IG-12 robot machine, which made me very happy because that was the second hardest. I laughed at something this week, with the hardest being something from this episode very excited to talk about.
I'm always so prone to hyperbole. Just on this show in general, never forget Kate Bush's cloud busting kneel drop being the best of all time.
Was that one that you liked? I can't remember.
that was the one from Palm Springs. But I truly think that this episode might have had the funniest moment, the hardest I've ever laughed at Ted Lasso.
Definitely the hardest I've laughed since who the fuck is Bernard?
The fuck is Bernard?
That whole exchange.
Yeah, well, let's dive right into it. Tonight, we are talking about Ted Lasso Season 3, Episode 5, Signs. With their season in a tailspin, Richmond tries to right the ship against mighty Manchester City. Off the pitch, everyone faces their own setbacks, which is it's a very interesting description. I'm opening it up. What's like the biggest question stemming from this episode? Because before we started recording, Alex was like, this is three episodes. Caroline, what is the biggest question stemming from this episode? Because I have multiple.
I think mine has to be what exactly Rebecca's phone call said. That's kind of, I'm very curious about what her situation is, and we will get into that in depth. But I got a little bit of closure on Ted's storyline, like for the season, but man, we needed to see that Ted.
Oh,
and we missed that Ted. We probably haven't seen that Ted since early first season, if we're being honest. And if we're also being honest, I think he's been a bad coach lately for a bit. And some of that you're like, okay, you know, it is what it is. Like, he's been dealing with other issues. I get that. Everyone's human. But we needed that out of him, and he hadn't given a good like inspirational speech. So I think Rebecca, and then I'm just gonna ask Keely.
A lot of inner workplace interaction potentially going on right
now.
Yeah,
they love that.
Yeah.
Writers love that.
This show is low-key an HR nightmare, like in a lot of ways.
Nightmare.
But the Ted thing, I'm looking forward to breaking that down because that was one of my favorite moments of the season thus far. We needed Ted back. Alex, what's the big question from this episode for you?
What did Roy do to Keely? That was a big one for me because for two reasons. And we've asked that so far is like, okay, we found out he broke up with her. We're sort of led to believe that it was just because he was afraid of getting done. He left before he got left, basically. This episode made me think there's something more going on. And for two reasons. When Keely's talking about him to Jack and she starts like talking about how hurt she is, it just doesn't seem like that's the natural flow of someone who was just scared and left. Or else you'd say, you know, I was focusing on my career and he just couldn't handle it. But the fact that, you know, we've seen Keely, I don't want to say act out, that's so condescending, but we've seen Keely respond to Roy hurting her before by doing exactly what she did with Jack, and that's with Jamie. When Roy didn't text her back for a day, what did she do? She slept with Jamie.
Yeah.
And then like during Ted's speech, when he said the part about like when you hurt somebody and it went to Roy, and it's like, I just think it's more than I'm leaving you. Like, I think he did.
Do you think he cheated on her or something? Where did he buy the tickets for? Where it's like nice gesture, but also dude, you can't just pick up and leave for 6 weeks and not have input on this. Was it Greece, Italy? Whatever.
I thought somewhere it was Spain. Tropical.
Spain? Yeah, that works too.
I don't know. But I mean, you know, I don't want to just assume he cheated, but if he did go on that vacation and had a lot of time to think, like, I just feel like there's something more here than just he left because he got scared.
Mm-hmm. And they've been very deliberate in not telling us why.
Yeah.
And we have, let's ring the bell. We have Amsterdam next week, where it seems like...
First seems time like we're hearing about this trip to Amsterdam. I'm so excited to learn more about it.
One of our beloved producer patrons, John Craig, one of his questions for this episode. John is great.
The biscuit boss.
Yes. Yes. That's one of his questions was, how much will the word Amsterdam be used in this episode? So right now we're going with the limit does not exist. and we will see. But yeah, there's definitely something going on there that needs to be revealed. I mean, I was worried that something would drive Keeley back to Jamie. I think I made those insecurities pretty clear last week, and we went the other way. And I need to listen. I will admit, I sent this text on Tuesday night when I watched the episode, Caroline. You were right.
Yes.
You were picking up what they were putting down.
It was just so funny because...
It was obvious.
Well, thank you. I thought I was going crazy last week without you, Alex, for several reasons.
I'm sorry.
But I was like, I was picking up vibes. And the guys were like, what?
Me and Mike, who just haven't picked up a damn thing ever.
Idiots.
And I was like, well, I'm very single. Maybe I'm missing these vibes. Like, I was just like, I got a vibe there.
It was a vibe.
It was a vibe. It was, and it, shoot, you guys, put Jodie Balfour in more stuff. This isn't, I mean, I don't, again, she's excellent in For All Mankind, but she's just the cutest thing in the world. Like, and she's so funny. I thought their chemistry alone, just the, not to use banter, but their banter was hilarious. Like, mm-hmm. Loved it.
Yeah.
With all the other clowns in the car. Well, she's,
I know.
Perfect. Yeah. No,
they were both good. They were both good. I think Rebecca and Keeley are the two kind of biggest questions of what's going on. I think with the male characters, we have kind of clear direction, a little more clear direction. It's like Ted has re-engaged. Like Maverick's re-engaged. We're ready to go. Like we're going to, yeah, he's going to shoot down the MiGs now.
God almighty. Did we really? I make it a point
Alex
not to
left
bring
the
up.
Chat.
No, I'm making a point not to bring up Top Gun at work because I know
my sister saw it for the first time today, by the way. Hilarious commentary. She's like, this is
the first one or the
yeah the first oh no she's seen Maverick 23 times in the theater. She saw it more times than I did. I created a monster when I took her to the screening with me. Like,
how does someone grow up with you but not see Top Gun?
Well, because I didn't see it until I was in college.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Because
I
got to college and was like, why do all of my guy friends want to fly planes because of this movie? This makes no sense to me. And I kind of did the like, is this your king? and now my dog's named Maverick, so go figure. But it was really
it's really the same thing though. The Maverick was pretty disengaged, and we're talking original Top Gun, like he's pretty disengaged after Goose dies, like doesn't want that action, is dealing with some things. And then it takes a moment of crisis, one Iceman being in trouble and this Zava leaving the team.
Alex is going to leave.
Same thing for Ted to re-engage. So I'm glad we've gotten to that point.
Well,
he almost didn't.
Like, he didn't even address, like, he needed the guys to be like, coach, do you have something for us on the superstar just retiring on us? Like...
I think it was the Henry moment that shifted for him. I don't think it was anything to do with the team. I think we finally, like we have said for 2 years now, there's always a son or father connection whenever he starts to have panic attacks, right? This was the first time we got to see very clearly what was happening in his mind. And we saw Henry going down the elevator and him saying, he's okay. He's okay. He's okay. And then he got clarity and then he was out. Like that was a huge, huge moment.
Yeah. And this is a good time to loop in another question actually from John Craig. He asked, when Ted is on the verge of his anxiety attack, and I will say this question I'm laying at the feet of Alex because this is right up her alley. When he's on the verge of his anxiety attack, he's looking at the pyramid image on his wall and then has a flashback to the single image of Henry leaving. What is the meaning behind the pyramid when it comes to that? And what were the multiple images flashed through on the previous attacks?
So... I thought about this earlier today and I don't have like a strong answer for it other than You know, I think the theme, even with Zava leaving, we're getting this recurring theme of like, if you lean into the things that really matter, then you will succeed, whether it's succeeding in love or with family or on the pitch or whatever. And I think Zava's, you know, we got to see, even though he's still like a diva, we got to see in this episode, Zava talk about, it was so sweet, about like his wife is the only woman he sees with clarity. Everything else is a smudge. And then he talks about like wanting to spend more time with his family. And I loved his line about, what was it, when you lean into the things you love, or like, what is it, when the universe, something, damn it, I always mess this up. Anyway, but this, the last
we part know of what the you're line, talking about though.
Yeah, but the last part of the line was, the universe does its thing in you. And it, you know, I think like it's really interesting with that pyramid, and even with the book inverting the pyramid, which I have a side note about that later. There's this whole thing with like the sport, right, and the game throughout the show, where it's like, what combination do they need to succeed, and like, what steps do you take to get to where you want to be? And I think Ted's just realizing like, that's not enough. And I think he's, even if they go all the way and even if they win the league, it's not going to be enough for him. And I think him like reaching that point of clarity and then almost having the panic attack, but using what he knows to reassure himself Henry's okay, and he can, you know, he doesn't have to panic about it. I think that was a big deal. But I think everything is just him reconciling his commitment to a job versus his commitment to being a dad.
Mm-hmm.
It's a hard thing to balance, even if you're in the same city or on the same continent.
Yeah, it's the one thing where that's where I think Ted, I've said multiple times, he should take the Missouri job, but like, college football coaches are, there's a priority number one there.
Yeah.
And Ted, it's certainly been the theme of this season, the biggest Ted theme. There hasn't really been a whole lot else going on Ted wise, except for this pull between this job and what he feels is his responsibility. But Ted has also been so good about prioritizing the emotional well-being of his players as well. And that's been one thing that I am hoping that we get kind of one last ride with Ted in that regard, that I'm kind of looking forward to. I mean, I didn't see him being checked out all season, or somewhat checked out. So let's get into best scene, because the speech that we've referenced, like that to me was stand out, like best scene, best moment of the episode right there at the end. Like I needed that, because I admit that I was kind of uneasy a lot of this episode. Like it just didn't make me feel as good as some Ted Lasso episodes have. Like there's a lot going on. There's a lot of stressors. The team is not doing well. We see a lot of our characters going through things. But that, like, and I think shout out Mike, who wasn't able to be here tonight, but
boo.
Mike texted the same thing of like, he needed that speech. That speech brought him back. And I needed that too. But what other, you know, there's a lot in this episode. What, Caroline, what scenes stood out to you here?
Roy talking about bullying.
It's the best. It's I'm just sorry. One of the best moments ever.
It's incredible.
Should I read his speech now?
Yeah, go for it. Okay. Go for it. It's just
so I did like, I fully transcribed this. I paused it and like wrote it all down. So this to set it up, they get the text. And actually almost right away, I was like, I bet Henry was the one bullying. As soon as the text came in, I was like, so first of all, Beard's
reaction.
I said the
same thing. I just want it for the record. I said the same thing.
Kyle was right.
Kyle was right. Everyone.
Beard's reaction was flawless. I love that he knows when every flight goes back to Kansas, like how you can get there, where it connects through. He's like, we can be there by 12. The house will be ashes by 12:30. Hilarious. No notes. And then the best was all the reactions when Roy starts with, the best way to deal with bullies is to ignore them. And they're all kind of like, what? This doesn't make sense. So he says, then you sneak into their house at 4 a.m., which statistically speaking is the hour people are least prepared to defend themselves. Then Beard goes, correct.
And it's, might I say, it's also the hour that he shows up every morning at Jamie's house. Is it 4 a.m.?
So true. I didn't even think of that. And then he goes, oh man. And he's saying it in his voice with the perfect cadence. And the music starts at this point. And he goes, once you're standing over them as they sleep in their bed, you start to beat them with a thick, heavy rope soaked in red paint, pummeling them over and over until they wake, confusing the paint for their own blood. I'm sorry, it's not funny to read. Like, when it's not it. When they beg you to stop, you laugh as loud as you can for as long as you can, and then you start to beat them again. And that's when Trent Crim drops his, what is it? What is the cup, Alex? It's the Rainbow Snoopy.
The Snoopy Let the Good Times Roll.
Let the Good Times Roll cup. And during all of this, like, they pan to everybody, and like Beard is aghast, and like Ted gulps loudly at one point.
Ted has the audible gulp.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then Ted goes, okay, I may just hold off on anything like that until I connect with Michelle and get the details and see what actually happened. And Roy's like, yeah, okay, good call. I'm telling you, I don't know what it was, if it was everything, or if it was like the delivery, or like,
That's
I was in physical pain laughing at that. Like, it was just art to me. Brett Goldstein is a wizard. It was just so funny. So funny. Oh my God. I can't. It was perfect.
It was the hard. I think it was the hardest I've laughed at the show consistently. Like, mm-hmm. there have been funny jokes, like we talk about the one liner or something. Hmm. That like speech was the hardest I've laughed at the show. It was so, and I'm not sure anyone saying that. No one on the show could do it better than Brett Goldstein.
No,
that was perfection. Is that what was awaiting Bernard if he hadn't been restrained?
You can't beat up a child. Why not? Oh, man. It was just so, and honestly, when you think about it, it's just so messed up. Like, waking someone up thinking that they're covered in blood. Laughing and continuing. I can't. It just was, man, I could not stop laughing. And I was like, what does this say about me? But I think about other people laughed too.
Okay, let's address the Trent Crim cup. Because that was a standout. There's obviously Trent is the only person in the building who knows that Colin is gay,
mm-hmm.
and there's just been a lot of rumors about, or a lot of theories about what's going to happen. Is Trent Crim also gay? Is he going to help Colin in some way? What's going on? And then he's holding a rainbow mug. Alex, you in the text you said misdirection.
No, I mean, I don't know if it is. You know, we're all paying attention to Trent right now for different reasons, I think. And like, you know, he's got a photo of his daughter on his desk. It's mm-hmm. a little hard to see. You know, he wears a bracelet, and somebody on Twitter pointed out it's like a beaded bracelet, like you would put together with beads. Somebody pointed out it's the bracelet that Jason Sudeikis wears because like it represents his kids. And so, yeah, I think. Even the way he holds the cup to make sure you don't see the Snoopy on the back is like the only reason we knew is we like looked it up is like, where can you get this? And so, you know, I don't know. Excuse me. Sorry. I've been sick all week. So this podcast is filled with coughs.
There's going to be minimal editing too, because I am putting it up when we're done. So
that's fine.
Live with it.
But I think, you know, he could either be gay or he could be an ally. And I don't think it's like misdirection. I just don't think it's necessarily indicative that, oh, he's definitely gay. I think that will come out next week, honestly, in Amsterdam. If he is.
Pun maybe or maybe not intended. That's going to come out next week.
I know.
Ring the bell. Let's talk about Rebecca a little bit. Let's talk about her seeing her ex-boyfriend, I guess, like ex-fling, John who
Wings.
Is...
Hold on, John the guy's name is Wings Knight?
Who is generously a fucking dweeb, and honestly, probably kind of like a dickhead. Like, I'm...
Yeah.
He's not even... Roy says he's fine. No, I don't think so. Like, sir, you leave Anthony Hopkins alone.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you say? Not. We didn't ask you to be famous. What a douche.
That was a good line.
It's the idea that like when Roy says he's fine because like, okay, sure. Like there are way worse people in the world. Like
yeah,
he's
like
probably treats this woman right. Like, you know, he takes care of everything. Not takes care of everything like you have to be doted on, but feels like he lives a comfortable lifestyle. But he's a dork. He's the guy who's got this horrible split scarf on that's Man United and Man City, which feels gross. It feels
awful.
Like Yeah, I was like, that's essentially like might as well be like a Virginia Tech, Virginia one. Like, yeah, what are we doing? It's like horrendous. Auburn, Alabama is when you said, like, no, and that's just like the, and he's had that conversation with Roy at the table. Yeah. Where he's like, oh, I root for whoever's playing better. Like, that's just like the worst kind of like dork. But if you're at a point where, like, I understand the idea of like you're dating and you're like, this guy seems nice. And like, you know, the red flags aren't like, I'm going to keep you in my basement. The red flags are you root for a team that, like, you root for the team that's winning. Like, so you're kind of like, am I splitting hairs at this point? Is he like, he seems like a good guy. He makes good money. Like, he's nice to people, maybe a little obnoxious. That's where, like, when Roy says he's fine, he's fine. He's also fine. Not good enough for Rebecca. No. Like, that's also fine to say. And I think we get a nice, and yet it's still that moment where she, this is a lot of projection. There's gonna be a lot of projection from your girl in this episode, I think, where she sees someone that she passed up on finding the things that she potentially wants. It's one of those you see like, oh, even so-and-so is engaged. Like, do we want to be engaged to that person? Like, probably not, maybe not, maybe, who knows? But like, it's that idea of like feeling most of the time extraordinarily pleased and happy and content with your decisions, and you'd rather be alone than settling. And then when you have that moment where something comes in front of you and like you see that thing that you do think you want, or you might want, you potentially want, it sucks. Like that, yeah. The way that she conveys emotion in this episode, I think people said it on Twitter and like we rolled their eyes over, but I think she locked up an Emmy with this episode. Like, she's such a good actress. Like, I just, and so I felt for her in that moment. Cause did she want him? No. But did she probably feel pretty shitty that 6 months after they broke up? And she, and the lady looked lovely. She seemed nice. And but then on top of all of it, the shite and nining armor.
Nining armor.
Yeah.
Alex, you look like you have thoughts.
Well, I think it's interesting that every clue so far has been about a person from her past. And, you know, it's not necessarily literal and it's not necessarily not. And so when I knew as soon as they said Anthony Hopkins, she was going to say that. Like, I knew it's because I was like, this feels really forced right now. This is like a dumb story. She's going to say that. And Rebecca's going to be like, what does it all mean? And I think her being confronted with her past, and even, I mean, this is true with Rupert too. Like, she sees Rupert with a baby. She wanted a baby with Rupert. Yes, she's glad that didn't happen because she ultimately does not want to raise a child with that man. But having to look back at people you were with and see them achieve the things in life that you wanted either with them or without them, that's a tough thing. And it's same with Sam. Like, I don't even necessarily think she wants Sam as much as she just like wants to be wanted by him, and seeing that he could potentially want someone else, as we saw in the last episode, I think that upsets her more than anything. But what do I know?
We see someone else hanging out with a member of the opposite sex, and that is Nate, who I almost just said our beloved Nate, because
I think he still is our beloved Nate.
This is the first time we've gotten fun Nate. Mm-hmm. And I want to say even more than, I think this goes back to around when he became an assistant coach. Can I go that bold? Can I go that bold? Where it's like, that's when we first, remember when he thought he was getting fired? That's when we first saw our shades of evil Nate. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, cause he went from zero to like, yelling at her and calling her names.
A shrew.
Yeah, like, you know. This was back to, but I want him, like, this, I loved it. No, oh, this is such a good Nate episode. Mm-hmm. I thoroughly enjoyed. I really liked when he made the phone call to his mom. So he didn't want to be too forward asking the model for her number. When essentially, I don't want to say she was like handed to him, but she was brought there to like meet him and like be his date at Bones and Honey by Rupert and whatever. And so he's still our sweet beloved Nate in the point where he's like, well, I don't want to be too forward and ask her for her phone number. Like, Nate,
this is where the show, the timeline thing though, because when this happens, it's been like a month, because he goes to Bones and Honey after West Ham beats Richmond. And then we've seen Richmond on the slide and things like that. So that's the one thing where it's like, she probably would have told the her friend to give Nate her number that whole thing. You'd think if you were gonna be the forward one there, and she's not like into Nate because she's into Nate. She's into Nate because he's the head coach at West Ham. You think you'd give him more than like appetizer, you know?
Well, you know, this is where like the sweetness of Nate comes in, because like I don't think he fully realizes how Ted spoiled him in a way that when he went from Ted to Rupert, and he's convinced himself Rupert wants him for who he is, as opposed to wanting him for revenge, which is what this whole thing is about. Yes. And same thing with her. And I've said before on this podcast, it's funny how, you know, the power is intriguing to Nate because it equals love and acceptance to him, but the money does not interest him at all. Just like the car, just like his apartment. Yeah. And in his mind, he's not thinking, I've got to go out of my way to impress this model with like money and flash. He sincerely is like, let me take her to my favorite place, in a place that means a lot to me. And he doesn't think twice about like, she's a famous model and she wants to be seen and she's on her phone all the time, because he's assuming like, yeah, this is my worth. Everybody wants me for who I am. When Ted is like, still Ted and his mom are like the only people in his life who actually, you know, give him that worth, or like see that worth rather. So yeah, that was tough to see. But my girl Jade, I can't. She's always seen him for who he is. And it was true last season. And then when he came in to get lunch a few episodes ago, and she just gives him that look like, when are you going to stop acting like a douche? Essentially, like, you're not like this. So why are you being this way?
Did you see how slowly he came in the door so he didn't have the door issue again?
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite little tidbits.
It really is like season one Nate. It was a lot. It was a lot more of that guy, and that.
But like episode 3-ish, like once he started to come out of the shell, because not episode 1 where he's like, "You remember my name?" Like it was much more of the like Nate starting to get confidence before he got like the power jumble with the Wunderkid stuff. And the one I loved that the model got in the car with her friends, it was a convertible, and the Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go was playing, which was what plays in Zoolander when the models go for the, you know, gasoline fight, orange mocha frappuccinos. And then when Jade comes back over and makes the baklava joke, baklava, right? The tasty, delicious dessert treats.
Baklava is divine.
Yeah, he goes, apparently when I get nervous or when I'm trying to impress somebody, I start talking like my gran. And that was probably my favorite line of the episode.
It was good.
I thought that was so sweet.
It was good. I want to work in another question for one of our producer patrons, Zach Rich. So there's not really a question here, but it does offer a discussion point related to this. It said Nate's redemption arc is coming in fast this season. They keep showing that he is at his base the same who he was at the beginning with regard to priorities. See the Taste of Athens scene. He hates seeing what Rupert's doing and sees the difference of him as a boss over Ted and Rebecca. I want all good things for our team, even if they went astray a little bit. So we're 5 episodes in. We're almost halfway through the season. Do we have to wait until the season finale for all to be right? Or do you think Nate is back in our full good graces? Alex, you're nodding. How long? What's like... Or Caroline, you're editing at Bet for the Win. What's our over under here?
I say 3 episodes.
I mean, I don't know, because I don't know how the story is going to progress, but I truly believe in the last game, whatever that is, he's going to be coaching for Richmond. I truly believe that. Like Ted will be gone or out, or like he will be back in a Richmond uniform before the season's over. And like, I think that's going to happen anyway, because I think like Ted's going to leave and then Nate's going to come back and, you know, handle all of it. But I think like it's not going to be one of those things that's after either they do or don't win the league or whatever is going to happen where he's like, oh, you were right the whole time. I think something dramatic is going to happen. He's going to come back and show up when it counts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We might need to ship in a Premier League expert for one of these episodes, because I just have a lot of questions about the mechanics of contracts and how things work. Like, well, with Zava, I have, you know, because I saw some stuff. Oh, Zava's gonna go play for West Ham or Man City. I was like, well, I feel like he's still under contract. It's not like It's not like Mike Trout whatever. Can just leave the Angels, even though we all wish he could just leave the Angels and go play for someone else.
Tungsten Armo Doyle and Mike Trout are going to leave
the Angels.
But if Nate gets fired, you know, if Nate's fired and there's no like.
Yeah, I'd be with that. Yeah, if Rupert lets Nate go, like, yeah, I wouldn't think there's
it's
any.
Disco in charge.
Disco. Oh my God, I love that. Name? I just also love the reference. Great scene in the locker. There were a bunch of good locker room scenes today and workout scenes. Plus a great song to the workout scene, by the way. Like, you can do it, put your back to it.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, yes. When they make the she's all that joke and like, you know, the hair, ponytail and glasses. And then Isaac has that great, like, you know, Nate, he's going to have to do his rebuilding on the inside type thing. Mm. I was like, oh. And then like, everyone, like, I think it was Danny that like nodded like knowingly.
It would have blown Nate's head up if he heard Jamie be jealous over him getting a bad A.
A bad A. Jamie's accent's so great. He had another one today or in this episode that I don't remember. I should have written it down, but I can never do it justice. But I was just like, perfect. No notes.
I'm so pumped for the rest of the season for Jamie. I am so in the tank for this guy. It is unbelievable. And again, imagine saying that 2 seasons ago. But I am, so in on him.
The subtleties between him and Roy in this episode were really good too. Like, there were a few, like, I think when Ted said in the end said the thing like, you know, everyone that we need is in this room. Roy gave him a meaningful look, a nod, and Jamie gave him the little like, yep, that's me. Like, I'm on this, you know. And then obviously they said the four. I did not realize the 4 a.m. thing. That's brilliant, Alex. But he's like, tomorrow at 4 a.m. He's like, you're fucking right.
That made me want to jump through a wall like the fucking Kool-Aid Man. Like, I'm so here for, because that's like Ted. I mean, if we're just talking the best scene for me is Ted's speech.
Yeah.
And him walking out there, he almost like, I was afraid he was going to leave without a good one. And, and it was going to end with Beard and Roy just kind of looking at each other. And it was going to harken back to Higgins suggesting to Rebecca that they might have to get rid of Ted. And I didn't transcribe the whole thing, but I wrote down parts like, it is a sign. I agree. Fact is, it's just a sign. Believe doesn't happen just because you hang something up on the wall. It comes from in here and up here and down here. It's the whole speech is so
good.
Fucking perfect. And it's like, I think the team and Ted got lulled into this like false sense of security, or the Zava thing kind of what was an outlier of like, yeah, we'll just ride this one guy. And I think that leaves everyone feeling complacent. And that was, at his heart, Ted is still a coach. Ted is still the guy who won the Division II national championship with Wichita State. Like, he's still he's still that guy. He can still be him. So it's just like, believe doesn't happen just because you hang it something up on a wall. It comes, I already said that. It's the
he's so amped. He's starting.
I'm so amped. Like, yeah, I might read it. Like, I saw that line. I was like, God, it's just great. A little bit like we talked about earlier, the crap, like envy, fear, shame. I don't want to mess around with that shit anymore. You know what I want to mess around with? The belief that I matter. Like, man, I'm so excited to see what happens to the team from here. Like, I'm excited. Well,
you saw Sam's reaction. Yeah. Sam was like, let's go. Like, he had this like proud smile. Like, it wasn't like, oh, he's saying the things that I need to hear for me personally as a player to like motivate me. It was like, Ted's back. Like, this is your goldfish type thing, where it's like, we are giving you, he's giving motivation and bits of wisdom and things to pull, like, to, he's coaching, he's doing his job. And like I said, honestly, he was not doing that before. I did love where he's like, we can't make him see, like, everyone that we need is in this room. Like, this is a good thing. Like, I only want to coach people that want to be here. We can't like handcuff him to his locker and make him love us. And Danny goes, we could try.
Well, I mean, it's a metaphor for Michelle too. You know, you can't force someone to do that. But I think, you know, Ted has had to process a lot of trauma, both in his past and just the trauma of getting divorced. He has a major setback this season when he finds out about Jake, and we're not done with Jake because that is going to pop up again, mm-hmm. and there will be consequences.
Alex is like either in the show or after when I drive someone's house
on my Twitter feed, show up at 4 a.m. with a rope soaked in paint. But like it is very, you can love your job. And I speak from experience, like for a very long time, working was everything to me because it was the way that I felt worthy to myself, and being good at my job meant I was a good human being, and work came above everything. And when I became a mom, obviously that had to change, but the desire didn't change. And I spent, you know, just like on and off over the years, and just other personal setbacks that people have. There have been quite a few times where I was in a haze for months at a time, not because I didn't love my job, not because I didn't want to be good at it, not because I didn't want to like manage a team well. I was just in a haze. I couldn't get out of it. And I think we've seen Ted in that haze for a while. So I don't think this was like his wake up call to get his shit together. I think he's tried to get his shit together multiple times. And now like him being able to bring himself out of that panic attack, I'm telling you, that was huge. Like I started bawling when he started saying he's okay, he's okay. I was bawling my eyes out because it's like, he needed to know he had the power to do that. He needed to know that like, if this happens again, he can control it. And now I don't think we have old Ted back. I think we have new Ted back because season one Ted compared to this one looks awfully performative. Mm-hmm. Looks awfully.
No,
like,
that's
man,
fair. Yeah.
You know, we're just like pumping sunshine up everyone's ass. And he's very clear about like, you know, we're not doomed. We're just done with this shit of like having to feel like whatever happens out there defines who we are as people. It's just another layer, guys. Mm-hmm.
They're done with the poopé.
The poopé. And the good things for this team that have happened this season happen in a montage. Montages are fleeting. They're not really meant to be that impactful in terms of the story. They're just meant to progress things and give us an update on what's going on. And it's fitting because a lot of what is good has happened to the team happened because of Zava. And didn't have, which is not someone who we were emotionally bought in with like this team. And what has made this show so good is how much we're bought in on these people. That's the guys on the team. That is Rebecca. That is Keely. That is every character starting with Ted. How bought in? These are our people. We have ridden with these people for three seasons. They have not introduced many main characters since season one that we are like all in on. Like the only other person on the team I would say was Jan Moss, really like one of the few additions. Danny in episode 6 of season one, and other than that, like we've ridden with these people. We're more emotionally invested in these people, and it's like, hey, we need to batten down the hatches, and we've got to pull ourselves out of this. And that starts with a leader. When things are going south for any team in any industry in anything, someone's got to lead. And it always had to be Ted. And I'm more excited for the football aspect of this season now than I was when they had Zava and when things were cooking.
Yeah, because I think we had said this all along. We were like, there's no way that they win because of Zava. Like, that's just not how this show's set up. Because they had to figure out, if we thought, what, an injury, or you would like switch teams, or like, et cetera, et cetera. They have, you know, I don't, again, I'm not a Premier League expert, but I'm going off of what they've shown us, and it's like, they have two aces. Jamie is an excellent player, especially now that he's like developed past the selfishness and the superstar and the pre-Madonna of it all. Stephen Nix, but they had to be able to play together. Like, what does Roy say at the very beginning, where he's like, and the rest of them are standing around watching Zava, like, we should charge him a ticket. Like, for like, you're not doing anything. And they were able to like rest on their laurels and just, like you said, ride this guy's coattails to victories because he was that good. But we've seen the growth of McAdoo. We've seen the development of Danny and Jamie. We know that Sam was like a superstar last season. So like, all of that has been subdued because of the introduction of this wild card thing that's, you know, golden ticket that's going to get them to the, you know, keep them in the Premier League. So I figured he wasn't long for staying on the team. I didn't know how long it would be, but they have to learn how to play together. They have, and Roy has to come up with schemat, like how to scheme. Like they lost that with Nate. But I think it's, I'm with you. I think there's nothing, I'm excited about what they do now because I think they've set it up where they're going to band together. I'm going to get a real sappy, amazing montage of them like learning to, you know, it's going to be the Jamie making the extra pass shit that I completely fall for. Mm-hmm. Love it. Mm-hmm. Love it.
Well, and Roy and at the restaurant when they first, when he first agrees to train him, said, tells Jamie that you could be better than Zava. And that's not Roy blowing smoke. Like that, no, he truly believes that is in Jamie. And so it's, I mean, no other way to put it. Like, this is his time now. Like, he's got to figure this out and he's going to be who Richmond gets behind. I mean, and he's tried too. The team has just been so goo goo eyes at Zava. I mean, Jamie has the frustration moment in this episode of like, I literally just said that. What Zava is saying, like when Zava gives his
Jamie's
his big
our little
speech.
Ray of sunshine now, where he's like, Don't be Debbie Downers. Like, we can do this, like we have everything.
Yeah.
It's like, who are you? I love this.
The last scene of this one fired me up completely. Like it was what I needed after an episode that left me feeling a little like little uncertain, a little nervous. So let's take a quick ad break. And then we'll get back with our Laughing Liam Award.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, so let's get into kind of our superlatives, I guess. Laughing Liam Award. I feel like we already gave this out with for funniest character in the episode. Roy is even if he didn't have another line, I think it's that.
I will say though, like I agree with that, but I think it was hilarious. I think Higgins though delivered one of the best jokes of the entire series.
Oh,
and we totally glossed over
the
it.
The text.
Yes. That was hilarious. About the text was from my father.
Oh my God. That was so funny.
It was really the dirtiest joke of the entire
Beard's
series.
Like, I told you to get off of Twitter.
Text is from my father.
Text is from my mother.
It's fantastic.
Beard has a couple gems too. Like we need to just loop this category in with like funniest joke, but Beard has the, I can't believe when they're talking about Man City, I can't believe our white whale has the same name as the strip club I danced at in college.
And then Ted's just like, yep. Incredible. Incredible stuff. Also, great strip club name.
No, fantastic.
Man City.
Do we think that Gina Gershon makes a cameo in the show at some point?
I don't, only because she actually responded to this episode and was like, since y'all keep bringing it up, I think you need to let me on the show at some point. Which she could be, again, like a misdirect. Like she could very well be in the finale or something.
That is so funny.
But yeah, because the second time they brought her up.
Mm-hmm. Roy's face was, because Beard wasn't there for that.
No,
it was the rom-com episode where they were at the like outdoor soccer thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. With McAdoo. I think the presumption, at least from my, that I think we're supposed to take away is that she left Beard for Roy.
I know. That's what I thought.
But it would be great if they brought her on though. I think that'd be awesome.
That would be incredible. It'd
be so good. Yeah. The other joke I liked was when Roy is doing his like pump ups with the team before the Man City game. And he's just like, wreck them, kill them, whatever. And then it's outclass them, Sam.
outclassed.
Yeah, and he gave him a handshake. Also good. I will say I'll shout out Jack again with her the whole Jack Keighley back and forth about the clowns and the exes, and she's like, "Oh, did you ever sleep with a clown like with the nose on the whole thing?" She's like, "Yeah, in his car. There were like 30 other clown friends there." that was excellent.
Do we want to talk out Jack and Keighley, because that's a part of the story we haven't really talked about?
Yes.
So Alex, I'll defer to you, because it makes me nervous for Keighley just because of the power dynamic there.
Well, sure, and this show just loves that.
Yes, this show
is, you said, HR nightmare.
Nightmare. But like, how much power I presume that Jack holds over Keighley's career and like an investment.
She's the investor. Yeah. She's the head of the investment firm that is like bankrolling Keighley and her endeavors right now.
This is like if Mike hooked up with the Draft King. Like it's just.
Oh my God.
The Draft King.
What do we think the Draft King looks like? It's just like the Burger King, but he's just like covered in dollar signs.
Or like the president of Chili's or something. damn, I'm mad he's not here.
That'd I know, be, I hope he listens such to good this jokes. Now. We're to tell him, like, you have to listen to this about an hour in.
So, I think a lot of people online have focused more on, like, you know, this gay storyline that comes out. It's like, that's really not the focus. I mean, I love the representation, but it's like, you know, and people are like, well, this never came up. There were no clues. Well, first of all, one of the first things she ever said to Rebecca was about dipping her toe in the lady pool.
Like, back was, into, you know, the lady pool.
Back into the lady pool. That's right. So like, to me, that part of it has nothing to do with it. But like, going back to what I said earlier, when we go back to season one and she had a good thing going with Roy, and then there was that day that he just like didn't text her back, and she's like, well, okay, he doesn't want to get coffee with me. He doesn't want to do this. Fine. She knows she doesn't want to be with Jamie, but what happens? He shows up and that's it. And like, she walks away from that, like, obviously acknowledging to both herself and Roy, like, it meant nothing. It was just because you rejected me. And so, you know, like, who knows? Maybe they'll turn this thing. Maybe Jack is the love of her life. Who's to say? I'm not saying it's a fling, but I do think coming off of the conversation, especially that weird moment when she talked about her ex and Jack thought she was talking about Jamie.
Yes.
It would have been just very easy to say, no, I did date Jamie, but then I dated Roy Kent. But she didn't say that. She's like, well, you know, like, there was just a lot.
Yes,
there.
But kind of. Yeah.
Yeah. It was, which was very strange anyway. And so, and it goes back again, like, I want to know what Roy did, because Keighley, outside of the, I have to schedule time to cry, to me, hasn't been devastated in a way that someone who was just randomly broken up with would. Like, I wouldn't want to be around Roy if he had just like left. However, if he had hurt me, if he had cheated on me or did something, oh, I would show up all the fucking time. I would be in my best clothes and be like, I am good without you. So yeah, I mean, I think like it wasn't shocking, because I did get the vibes in the episode before. But that, again, consequences, like, that is not going to be good.
No.
No.
You know,
no.
And especially
it's
doing that with someone who controls your future.
And KJPR hasn't been the smoothest path. And like, the whole situation is Shandy finally coming to a head. Like, she lost a client that day because of that.
That was a 3 a.m. call, I believe. Not reaching our 4 a.m.
No. Yeah, it's...
I'm curious about the Roy Keighley thing, because I don't disagree with anything that you said, but I also could see... So nobody knew that they had broken up, right? When we started the season. It was all very quiet, which makes me actually think that it was like, because I think that they are so madly in love with each other, which is why this is so painful. So like, I would believe that he didn't do something overly dramatic or cruel or whatever, not cruel. I'm not saying we think Roy has been cruel, but like cheating or whatever else. And that they're literally so unnecessarily heartbroken that it's painful for her to think about or talk about. And I think it caught her off guard when she didn't know that it was Roy, where she said Jamie, Tart, whatever. Because I also can't pick up, I couldn't pick up on what part was serious, what part was joking, when she says, oh, so bad breakup. And she goes, no, I'd do it all again. And I know, I felt like the do it all again was sarcastic, but mm-hmm. I felt like the no wasn't. You know what I mean? Like, it made me feel like the actual breakup itself wasn't horrible. I don't know. It's a weird, I go back and forth on it, because I agree with what you said, Alex, where it's like, this just isn't, like, there's so much pain there. If it was just a, you know, we're busy and drifting apart thing, it doesn't really, but I think, I don't know.
Well, think about the two interactions that we've seen of them together this season. There is when they're having the talk with Phoebe, and yeah. Keeley has a moment of wanting to comfort Roy when he says, you know, he's having to take on more responsibility in Richmond, yep. and she says yeah. something comforting to him. And then Roy, when he comes in, when Keeley is doing the press thing, or she's talking to the players about something, and Keeley comes in and she says, well, Roy, I told, you know, the press knows you don't like doing interviews or something. And he says that I would, you know, well, I'd do them for you or something like that.
Yeah.
The two interactions we've had of them, they are both yeah. still clearly trying to do something for each other.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I don't know. I think, like, there's no clear vision of that. I do think it's something that they want to answer, though. And I yeah. think it started when they were giving Phoebe the talk and he said, we're just busy. And she immediately looked at him like, you know, that's not what it was.
And she said on a break.
Yeah.
So there's a lot. So I think more like if we put aside the, you know, love of PR nightmare relationships that this show has, like, and I'm not even not like, whatever, fine. Don't even care. I think it's just a like she needed to get out of her own head and get out of, you know, and have a moment for herself of what she thought would make her feel better. I think there's going to be yep. a fallout from it, because as much as I absolutely love, I actually really like the character Jack. I think she's like funny and cool as shit and like, you know, whatever. Again, Jodie Balfour, so great. But there's no way that I mean, I don't think like Keeley's going to get fired or the whole thing, but it's going to end up when like, cause she, you know, people might complain like, well, what was the point of the Shandy storyline? Like, you know, that only lasted X number of episodes or whatever. And I think it showed that Keeley's not 100%, not that you would ever be, she's not 100% ready to run this thing on her own. She didn't know what the CFO was. Like, she's spending, we've talked about the 200 pounds a week on flowers and stuff like that. Like, it was the comfort hire to make her feel like she had more control or felt more at home in a position that she was uncomfortable in because it's so new to her. And that was coming home to roost in this episode in the form of tons of goat shit.
Yeah. I just,
now I'm actually oddly curious how bad like baby goat shit smells, because this is twice in a season that they've like really hammered home.
Yeah. You're going to have to explore that one.
Yeah. Next week on Big Screen Sports, Kyle goes to a petting farm.
first ever live recording from a petting zoo.
Guys, yeah. I gotta tell you, it smells terrible.
It smells awful. I'm the Keeley just feels her character, her arc, what's going on in her life, just all of it feels really vulnerable right now. She yeah. feels really at mercy to other people, especially like with whatever's going to happen, the fallout with this, with Jack, what happened with Roy. And I'm ready to not be on ice skates with this, like shaky in the middle of a not quite frozen pond with Keeley. I'm ready to get on some solid ground here and have some direction and know what's going on. Cause I'm deeply nervous about this.
Well, and there's something about it too, where it's felt like, I still think they have an excellent relationship and they're best friends, but the inavailability for Rebecca, like she missed calls and like they weren't at the game together. And so there's that chasm, that's a very dramatic way of saying it, but they used to do all of this stuff together. And so it's kind of like, who's picking up for Rebecca in these moments of like, you know, and why wasn't she picking up because she's having this I feel like it's safe to say inappropriate relationship.
It is an inappropriate workplace relationship, regardless of the genders of the folks who are engaging in it.
Exactly. Oh yeah, I didn't even think of that. it's just like she's making these decisions. I think Keely's just making a lot of rash decisions.
Mm-hmm. She's rebounding.
Yes.
This is her version of cutting all her hair off.
Yeah, like she's given herself lots of bangs.
Yeah.
Like
back in after my fiance and I broke up back in 2011, I went and got a fucking pixie cut. Is Keely's pixie cut. She just wants to feel like her body is her own, her choices are her own, and she doesn't have to feel so sad and out of control all the time.
God, I really should not let Alex say stuff after me because it's always so smart. And I'm like, you know, things. And she's like, this is
my pixie cut. Really drove the point home.
Real smart choices.
Speaking of the call from Rebecca at the end.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to clear out the lane. Alex is standing in the lane. She's like Shaq standing there calling for the ball. She's going to ISO someone.
She's back down her defender. Yeah.
Call for the ball.
Okay.
Take us in.
I want to talk about Rebecca for a second. Because obviously let's go back. Season one, when Rupert comes to her office and says that Bex is pregnant. And I remember saying this on the podcast. It was one of the first moments that just kind of struck me because she's like an incredible face actor. Like she can just do it with her face. And I'm like, you know, she was obviously very defiant, very annoyed with him. But it was the moment he said, she's like, I thought you didn't want a child. I can't remember exactly what she said. He says, I suppose I just didn't want one with, you know.
Oh, God, it gives me so much rage. So
she has to fight so hard to hold back tears because you can tell in that moment that meant something to her. And, you know, for women, like we have a clock. We're not like men who can, you know, fucking Methuselah can have like
have a character, like, have a child, even when you're like a character from the fucking Bible, as Rebecca says,
Bible. And so we have the seed planted. Then season two, we have that lovely episode where, excuse me, y'all, where she's keeping Sassy's kid. And we realize it's more than just her mending fences there. She also really loves watching over. She talks to Roy about, you know, like kids. And he's like, they just want to be around you. They're just important. And she likes saying, we can watch a scary movie. You can tell she's got maternal instincts. It means something to her. So, and then you go to this season and the psychic scene is like funny. And you could tell she's freaked out. She does not get irate until the woman says the mother thing. And she says, you're not just dangerous. You're fucking cruel. And again, with the face, and they have completely spelled this out for us that for years, being a mother is important to her. She felt like Rupert robbed her of that. And I think that's where so much of her anger came from, was her window was over. Even if she found a relationship that made her happy, even if she got struck by lightning, like the kid would not be part of it. And I think it really upset her. Okay. So we get into this episode. She's starting to realize the psychic might be onto something. We have the matchbook. We have the Shite and Nighting armor. And so naturally, she's thinking about what she said about her becoming a mother. And she goes to the fertility clinic. We see the couples in the clinic that Rebecca saw in season two, the day she broke up with John at the coffee shop. Same couples.
Yep.
But they're now in the clinic. So lots of parallels there. She goes to talk to the doctor. Which, by the way, they already have an established relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So
also, that place looks like it's like she went to the doctor at Downton Abbey.
I was about to say, the doctor's office there, everything we've been told about socialized medicine is a lie. Look how lovely that doctor's office is.
It was a lovely office.
It's gorgeous.
And she says, like, I don't even know if it's possible. Maybe it's ridiculous. And he's like, actually, no, it's not ridiculous. I have people older than you come in, blah, blah, blah. He's like, we'll have to do some tests. And he says, I don't know if he says imaging. I think he says imaging.
He says, we'll take some blood and do some imaging.
Okay, yeah. So blood, imaging. We get to, you know, he texts her before the match. He's like, I'll have your results. I'll call you after.
Also, don't like that move.
Hate that. That's
hate that. That's not necessary. Oh, I have this huge match that I'm watching, and now I have to wonder what the fertility doctor is going to tell me afterwards. Great. Thanks, brah.
So he calls. And we don't hear his side of it. And we see her reaction. She says, you know, no, I thought that was the case, but thank you for letting me know. And we are led to believe, for every reason possible, that he has told her she cannot have children. Mm-hmm. And we see her a little mystified and a little stunned, and she sits down, and then you just kind of see some, like, her face a little frozen. She goes to call Keely. Keely doesn't answer. And then, you know, we see the rest of it. And we are, everything about that scene led us to believe that's what it was. She found out she could not have kids anymore. Fellow listeners, I have a theory, and I just want you to stick with me on this. I think Rebecca is pregnant. Okay?
We need a theory air horn.
Hold on, let me get my app. I got an app for this.
Okay.
We need like Mike to record something that's like theory alert.
Well, so here are some things, reasons why I think this. And I do think it's Sam's baby, but I also think if it's not, that doesn't really kill this theory at all. Let's go back to the restaurant party, you know, pre-opening episode. The only person we see leave is Trent. And then, of course, we see Colin and his boy in the alley. We didn't see Sassy and Ted leave together, but they ended up in bed together, didn't they? We saw them after the fact. Last thing we see of Rebecca is her throwing back tequila. And obviously with the matchbook and Sam and everything else. It is possible. It's certainly possible that she hooked up with Sam that night. We're just not to know about it. The episode right after that episode, we have Shandy saying, really excited about this footballer campaign and talking about how all the single guys in the squad are going to do it. So this is like a current thing she's working on. Rebecca instantly gets a little spooked and she's like, oh, so all the single guys. So, you know, Sam and so-and-so and so-and-so. But she's like a little more bothered about it than she was, say, a month ago or whenever the dinner was, you know. And then Shandy says, well, actually, I don't think he's doing it anymore, as if that's like a recent development. So we know Sam was committed to this at some point and backed out. And we're led to believe it's old girl at the restaurant. Okay, so let's get that out of the way. Going back to the phone call, we don't hear what the doctor says on the other line. We do know she had a blood test and imaging test. Now, plenty of TV shows will just do the suspension of disbelief thing. And I mean, we've seen like when women give birth on TV and the kid's like 6 months old when it comes out.
This
like,
is a we giant know child.
The way women are represented, like water breaking and all that shit that doesn't actually happen the way they show. So this could be a total, like, you know, I'm reading into it too much and I realize that. But if you're doing ultrasound imaging, they do that to see if there's any structural issues in your womb that would prevent you from being able to have a baby. Now, remember, at this point, she just thinks it's her age. If she were menopausal, it wouldn't be a question. She would know that she couldn't because it's physically impossible. So she's still having periods. We know that. Sorry to everyone out there who's freaked out about a period, but guess what? We all have them. So we know that much. And it can show you those structural issues. But unless it was something severe, like there's nothing there that could definitively stop that. Plus, when you're getting ultrasounds done, you're seeing what they're taking. You're seeing the ultrasound as they're doing it.
Yeah.
So you would be able to see that. Now, the blood test checks hormonal levels.
Yep.
And it can indicate if a woman is premenopausal and potentially going to that. However, you can still get pregnant when you're premenopausal. There is nothing in an imaging test or a blood test, as far as I know, based on what I know and the research I've done. I fully admit I could be an idiot and totally wrong here. So do not come for me unless you're a doctor. There is just
definitely
nothing,
a lady doctor.
It's just hard to imagine a situation based on just those two tests alone where he would say it's not possible. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like,
but if he did a blood test and imaging, like, you, again, the imaging one will throw you off a little bit because then you could say like, oh, wouldn't they have found the heartbeat or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But you can get proof of pregnancy from both of those things.
Here's what I'll say from personal experience. I didn't know I was pregnant until I was about 18 weeks along, which I know sounds insane. Let's just get into my gynecological history. But I was sick though for those months and I kept going to doctor after doctor after doctor and they couldn't figure out what was wrong. They did a full abdominal ultrasound on me when I was pregnant and did not find anything because they weren't looking for it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
I didn't
like
go see champion Jack.
Right? Again, like, you know, they're not expecting Ted Lasso viewers to get into the weeds that much. And maybe I don't know, but you know, the blood test would absolutely tell you if she were pregnant. I just have a hard time buying that those tests said she absolutely could not do it. That's all. And so, you know, I think it could be Sam's baby. And if it is, this obviously changes everything for her. It's not to say they're going to end up together, but I just don't think they went through all that trouble with fertility just to see us let down again, you know, for Rebecca's future. Because if they were going to make it into a situation where she was going to adopt, I feel like they would have written that in already. Like they would have made that, sorry, that's my phone, part of the process. And so, and you know, like in the early stages of pregnancy too, I love this like 101 I'm giving everybody on like, exams. If you're very early pregnant, they don't use a traditional ultrasound for that anyway, but also the imaging they do at fertility clinics, they may not do a traditional one. They might do like the probe or whatever. Anyway, we don't need to get into that. But point being, I just don't think she was told what we think she was told. That's all. That's my only thing. And most phone calls on this series in general are either FaceTimes or we see both people on both ends. We rarely, I mean, I'd have to go back and watch. I'm sure there are examples, but we just rarely ever see anything that's one-sided and we do not hear the other side. Apple loves to get that product placement in. They love their FaceTimes.
Look at all of the things that are,
you know what I'm saying? So I know it's far-fetched and I'm fully fine with being wrong. I've been wrong about a million things about the show, but
I buy it.
I can't shake it. I really,
because she also sat in the cab. Because
this was the other part of it.
Yeah, so she's holding the green matchbook from his restaurant, and she
when Ted's talking about hope.
Yeah,
it's like when Ted's giving a speech and he starts talking about the hope and belief.
And they cut
to her, and she's holding the matchbook, and she has resolve. Like,
yeah,
she's calm about whatever it is, and maybe we'll find out she wants to adopt. Maybe we'll find out whatever. But that wasn't her just deciding, okay, this thing that I wanted for a long time, I don't want anymore. There's a reason for it. And she's holding the matchbook, and I don't know. It's just a theory.
That scene, regardless of what he told her, she crushed that scene. Cause it's just like the whole, I'm just really glad that they kind of did a whole fertility thing. If we're being honest, like it's, yeah, life is cruel sometimes. It's just a,
I think we've all learned a lot tonight.
Get in the door. Yeah, I was gonna say, to get in the door.
You can cut out all that if you want to.
That was exactly what I needed out of this theory. That is detail.
I just think, again, like everything is for a reason, and maybe it's just something else entirely. Maybe he was just telling her, yes, you can have kids. Yeah, who knows? But I just think it was a slight misdirect. That's all. Because that should have crushed her based on how we've seen her react to like the sensitivity of being a mother. And I just don't feel anything about her reaction was like devastation.
Yeah. And the fact that this is not a thing that can ever happen for you.
Yeah.
He could have said like, we need to do more tests on XYZ. Like this number is low. Yeah. Cause I agree with you. Now, when you texted me, I was like, man, come on. And then I thought about it and you're like, no, you're absolutely correct. Because there's nothing that they could have done that would have been that quick to rule it out completely.
Yeah. But who knows, you know, like I've not been to a fertility clinic. I've never had those tests done before. I just know as somebody who, you know, had a child and had like things all over your body and the things that, you know, doctors for months tested me over and over and over. And the one thing they weren't looking for was pregnancy. And that's why they didn't find it. They were looking for like, why is she sick all the time? God, I hate revealing this. It's so vulnerable. But like, I was on birth control. You know, like this wasn't a situation of, I was in a monogamous relationship. Like this just wasn't a situation where pregnancy was even on my mind. They looked for everything but that. And it took me being scheduled for surgery to get my gallbladder out when I was 4 months pregnant and didn't know it. And it was the first urine test that I had to take in the entire process because of the anesthesia. And they came back and they're like, okay, we're going to do a blood test because we think you might be pregnant. I'm like, haha, your tests are wrong because you've been all up in this for months now. Like you would have known, but they weren't looking for it. And that's so wild. You were talking about projecting earlier. That is all this is just me saying, look, doctors are great. I'm just saying, like, if you're not looking for it, and if you assume, you know, if you go looking for, like, is somebody capable of doing it? I don't know. We'll see. That's all.
Well, and in the, I mean, shit, we're all just spilling our souls here on the, getting serious on the podcast. No, I mean, so it's like, I'm 38, single. Like, I've looked into, you know, and having to make that decision as a woman where you're like, what am I going to do with my life? Do I want to have kids at some point in the future? And you decide, like, let's look into things. It's $900 to go talk to a doctor.
Cool country we live in.
It's awesome. Love that. And then if you decide that you do want to try something like freezing your eggs, it's $10,000 to $15,000 perhaps to do that. Yeah. And then that's not even the part where it gets to like putting it back in you, which is tens of thousands of dollars more. It's so, and you know, the project, like you projected from your experience, I projected that disappointment side where it's just like, yeah, again, like I'm not at that point. It's not off the table. It's blah, 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 you know, whatever. Hey, yeah. Listeners, here's my life. But it's just one of those things, like, that's the stuff that the show did where you, like, you put your feelings into it and you understand what these characters are going through because, like, there is a clock and there is, like, you know, she thought she was in the relationship that was going to be the one that ended with her having kids and he turned out to be the devil. So it just was so, that's what, that phone call, I wept listening to her, like, say, like, ah, so I thought, just wanted to be sure. Like, I just thought it was so heartbreaking. Either way that it goes, I thought that it was just so, it's such a big thing for her. It's so personal. It's so important. Like, it's just, it's a tough topic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if there's one thing that I think we all know about this show is I don't think it is going to leave us with a bad taste in our mouth or not feeling uplifted about the future of our beloved characters. Yeah. The show is not Game of Thrones. So it'll be
interesting. If there's a wedding at any point, though, I'm out, guys. I'm not watching a wedding episode after Game of Thrones, Succession. Yeah. I'm not doing it.
Out on it.
But I do want to say, too, you know, just to be clear, like, and I think the show is going to make it a point to do this, too. So, again, I could be totally off base. There are multiple ways to become a mother. She could be a stepmother. She could adopt. She did freeze her eggs at one point in time and maybe she can't carry the child, but she can get a surrogate. Like, we don't know. Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, this isn't the only way for her to do that. And
it's Ted's baby.
Well, that's what I was going to, I mean, Alex has been sparring with the Ted Becca crowd. And I will say one of our beloved producer patrons, Aaron Figueroa, his question was what eventually drives Ted and Rebecca together. He is part of team Ted Becca. I would think that if she is actually pregnant, that this makes that much more unlikely, just not unless it is Ted's baby, which it would not be.
They really snuck that in. That'd be hilarious.
I thought about this, actually. Because this has been my complaint. Like, I've said this in our text thread. Like, if they ended up together right now, it'd feel completely unearned. There would have to be, like, something. It has been the most platonic of friendships.
It's an amazing friendship.
Amazing friendship.
It's very intimate. And I think because we are conditioned to say, well, if you're going to have intimacy with somebody of the opposite sex or the opposite gender that you are attracted to, then there must be something else there. Look at going back to When Harry Met Sally, like, men can't be friends with women. And that movie sort of stands to prove that, like, they end up together. So I think, like, you know, and even in interviews when they've asked, like, are Ted and Rebecca going to get together? And Hannah says they are together. Like, they are. They're not banging it out, but, like, they're close. They have a cosmic connection. Like, that stuff is possible without being with somebody. I was talking to Caroline today about Mindy Kaling and BJ Novak. And I think that's such a strong example of, like, they are the closest people in each other's lives. They were in love at one point in time and not anymore. But, you know, a lot of people are like, that's weird. They totally have to be together. I bet he's the father of her children. Just the brains are, like, conditioned to think that. I do not see them together. And there are multiple reasons for it. But ultimately, like, we know the end game for Ted. It's back to Henry. Whatever that means. I'm not saying he and Michelle will definitely reconcile. I do think it's on the table. He's either going back to the States or something will happen to bring Michelle and Henry to him. He's not going much longer without being with that kid. Mm-hmm. And You know, I mean, could there be a scene like Rebecca moves to Kansas? Sure. If they do that, fine. I mean, I'll be confused by it, but it's fine. It just, the discourse I see is a lot of, well, he can be a good dad, even though he's overseas. What has shown you that? Because he's spiraling, or has been up to this point, because he's not there, because another man has taken his place. And there's just no reality where he would choose Rebecca or any woman over Henry.
God, imagine what Rebecca's wealth could buy in Kansas, though. Like, what her house would look like.
Be amazing.
Fucking incredible. She could buy Kansas. Like,
the wildest thing to me is what you pointed out on Twitter, Alex, is legitimately when I get into some of these threads and I'm just like perusing as a, you know, as a visitor to some of these Ted Becker threads.
An observer.
Yeah, I do that all the time on Twitter. And I'm always terrified that I'm going to accidentally like something. That's like when I'm in one of these ridiculous threads, like, you know. And so it's what you said where it's like, it feels like we've been watching a different show.
Yeah.
Like, because everything that I see, it's like, look, the way that she's standing talking to Ted in the same spot, it's in the hallway and they talk there twice. This is soulmate shit. And I'm like, what is happening? It is their place of work.
I know.
They probably have limited sets.
Like, the soulmate thing is very strong for a lot of Ted Becker shippers. And I'm not denying that, but like, I do have a soulmate and it's my best friend. And like, I think my sister is part soulmate too. Like, there are people in my life that I feel very connected to, that I'm very affectionate with. And it doesn't go to a romantic relationship. But I also don't want to reduce people who ship them to being like, you don't understand love. I don't feel like it's that. Like, if you come into it thinking, well, the end game has to be the two of them, then you're looking for that, right? You're looking for clues in every episode and you're telling yourself that definitely supports it. But I think what's funny is how divided the fan base is. It's not so much like, oh, I hope they don't get together, I don't like them. It's like, are you stupid? Why would you think they're together? And then the other side is like, you're an idiot. How could you not think they're together?
How could you miss the signs?
The signs.
It's wild. Like, it's the group of people can watch the same 50 minutes each week and say, it is obvious that this is what they are writing towards.
I know.
And have that thing be two completely different.
Yeah.
Where it's like, someone said, like, I'm going to feel gaslit if they don't end up together.
I was
going to
say that. And I'm like, one of y'all
what?
Shared. Like,
I know.
What?
She's like,
it's wild. Or the one where I sent you today, Alex, where it was like, people saying that he doesn't have any chemistry with Hannah Waddingham is like insulting to Jason Sudeikis, because literally everyone has chemistry with Hannah Waddingham. And I'm like,
you can have,
I mean, they could have sexual chemistry, but they don't, because they're not playing potential sexual partners, they're playing best friends. Mm-hmm. Like, they have amazing chemistry on screen together, but not like me being like, kiss.
I know. That's literally the only thing.
It's not those vibes.
It's like, I just think, and look, we could totally be wrong. Maybe next week is their big romantic get together and we'll have to come back and eat our crow. And I'm fine with that if it makes sense. Like, the only way this show could, because I know I've said before, I'm like, I'm out on this show if they get together. What I really mean though, because I'm just silly most of the time, as long as the writers, like you said, as long as they earn it, as long as the story makes sense, as long as they're true to what they've laid down, you're not going to hear a complaint out of me. I don't see it happening. I don't, like, based on everything they've given us, I don't. But if it does, it does. I'm fascinated by how angry people are about this topic. The show
they
that was supposed to combat.
Sassy.
I know.
They went after Sassy.
Oh, yeah. And they're like, Sassy sucks and she's not a good friend.
Oh, no,
I know.
Sorry, that was aggressive.
Well, it's just, but it's that idea, right? And so this show that was like developed and is seen as a like bastion of anti-toxicity has yielded one of just the meanest fights on Twitter and everywhere
that's
else.
That's how you know it's gone mainstream, though.
If I know
it's developed,
I know it's a
toxic
big deal.
Subculture, it's gone mainstream.
I like the where they do like polls only for Ted Becker shippers.
Yes,
and they're like, when someone's like,
respond.
Oh, I don't see it, they're like, did you see who it was for, though? You're not the audience. Like,
we're just
like,
in
oh
our own little
goodness.
Clubhouses or something. I just, you know, but I think too, like, I'm again, it's the projecting thing, right? I have the 10 years ago, I might have felt totally differently, but I'm in a position, I'm older, I have different family experiences, I have, you know, a child, I have people in my life that I feel like I have a connection with. It's very easy for me to say, oh, that's totally possible to do that platonically. But 10 years ago, I don't know if I would have said that. 10 years ago, I might have been like, well, they have to end up together, right? Because everything in movies tells us that. It's a male and female lead. And it starts with them not, you know, her not liking him. And that's how it ends up. I've just never felt like that was this story ever.
I haven't felt like it once. We got a few more superlatives to give out before we speculate on what's coming in Amsterdam, because I do want to leave some time for that. best time, worst time. For who had the best time in the... Jack maybe had the best time. She seemed like she was enjoying herself, like even before their makeout session.
What I think Barbara.
What was in Barbara's desk?
I know, that's what I want. But I like Barbara finally got rid of Shandy.
Shandy's hand.
I don't think we're done with Shandy, by the way. But I think Barbara had a pretty good time.
Did Zava have a good? I feel like Zava's always having a good time. Like he gets to just stare at his wife now.
And farm his avocados.
Yeah.
So I mean, he's always having a good time.
I think Nate had a good time.
I think Nate eventually had a good. Nate had both a bad time and a good time, because I think he was.
Yeah.
I think on the date he was very nervous, and then obviously he gets stood up, and that never feels good. Or like stood up mid date. I don't even know what. I guess ditched. Ditched is what happened.
Gets
to
ditched.
Him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wake me up before you go.
So good.
Richmond fans have a bad time. The fans back at Mays Pub. Yes. Have a tough time. Lenny Harris pinch hitter award for best supporting character in this episode.
Higgins, did you notice he didn't Higgins gag once good. When he had that discussion with Rebecca?
He did such a good job.
It's the first time he hasn't gagged during an uncomfortable conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's big for him. And he's director of football operations, and I think we're going to see him take on a bigger role at the end of the season too. But like, even though he stumbled through it and had a hard time saying it, I just love how he's like, what about anything I just said makes you think I want to do that?
I want to do this.
But like, what's been the whole, like, and I never really found it that funny, but it was consistent. The whole running gag the whole time was anything he was uncomfortable with, he would gag.
Mm-hmm.
And this, he's like being assertive and he's getting into it. And plus he had that great joke.
Yeah.
So funny.
I'm good. Yeah.
He was good.
I'm good with Higgins. Good with Higgins.
I think either I thought Nate, just overall had a really great episode.
That's a good point too.
I thoroughly enjoyed
it was certainly the comeback train. The comeback train has now left the station. We got some indications of it for the West Ham episode, but this is like he's ready to come back and be our number one boy. Sweet Nate.
I did miss him.
Yeah.
I missed him a lot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We actually got a big chill moment that we went over in detail with the speech. That is the...
Oh, yeah. Oh, I was going to say Roy, but no, okay, never mind.
So, is it...
Different kind of chills.
Is that speech better than the season one finale speech?
No. I mean, not that it's worse either, though. I think it's on par with it. I think it's, you know, I was on another Ted Lasso podcast today, actually, and they asked me the best musical moment in the show, and I brought up that season one speech and how I took the finale in our draft because of, like, I just, you know, the only thing worse than being sad is being sad and alone.
Mm-hmm.
None of us in here alone. I think it was right up there with it, though, and it was so genuine and, like, there are many times on the show where Jason slips out of his accent and he goes into Jason voice. And he did that in this speech. And that always gives me like a little, like when he talks about, we're not doomed. It's a Jason voice, not Ted's. And I don't know. I thought it was great.
I really liked it.
It was excellent.
I don't know. That's a really tough question.
Just let it be.
Yeah. Don't make me pick my favorite child.
Yeah. It was strong though.
It was. Okay, so next episode, Amsterdam. We've heard a few things. We've had some rumors that this is going to be a banger of an episode. I don't know who started those rumors or who's talked about it, but the whispers on the streets of the Netherlands have said that this is going to be a heater. Do we have any predictions? Any what absolutely needs to be resolved and answer. What do we think?
I think Colin comes out in Amsterdam. I think we'll find out.
Yeah, I think Colin and Trent, certainly based on like what we know about their shooting schedule over there, I think Colin and Trent will have the moment where Trent's like, I know, whatever that looks like. And hopefully that means he will, you know, he's a strong, capable man. He's going to have a realization.
I'm not now a piece of shit.
I know. Now that Zava's out of the way, he's back in the rotation. Yeah. Like, this is kind of Colin's like, you know, coming out party in more ways than one. Mm-hmm. I do think that will happen.
And they have the subtle, not so subtle hint when Ted said shame in the list of things that he was, you know, when he listed, like you said, hope, they went to Rebecca and like the pain that you caused, they looked at Roy. And then when he said shame, like envy, shame, Colin had a moment where he kind of was like, he looked ashamed, where he's like, I'm not living like who I am to my teammates and my friends.
That could have been about his driving. I think that was kind of... Maybe this episode is all about Colin been about his driving.
That is very, I'm a strong, capable man. I'm not a piece of shit. Colin, you don't need that last bit.
What I think is interesting is that the episode is called Sunflowers. And
hit us with it.
Two things about that. The sunflower is the Kansas state flower, by the way. But sunflowers, the famous paintings, because there are different copies of them, by Van Gogh, the Amsterdam version of it, I believe, I'm totally wrong about this and someone's going to correct me, it traveled, I want to say like 70 times, like was a, they had it at different museums since like in the post-war period. And it got to the point a few years ago where it could not travel anymore because the humidity and weather in different parts of the world were ruining it. So it's in Amsterdam permanently. I just wonder if something there will come of it, or maybe it's just sunflowers, who knows? But, you know, and this is also the big, when they were shooting there, people saw Rebecca fall into a canal off a boat when it was raining. And, you know, the psychic's whole thing about thunder and lightning and you're soaking wet, but you're safe.
Is that the last piece of her fortune that hasn't come up yet?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we might get some clarity there, or just another like, you know, hey, this is something from your reading that we don't understand yet. But what I think is interesting, and we have to remember, like part of the reason this season got so delayed was because, they added Amsterdam like late in the game and kind of reworked, like Amsterdam wasn't supposed to be part of this season. It was a late addition. They went on location and scripts were rewritten. I'm not saying the story was changed, but like everything was changed to accommodate this last minute Amsterdam trip. So we really, I don't think understand the scope of like those decisions being made and maybe what it did for the story. So, yeah.
I'm so
excited.
Yeah. I'm so absurdly excited. Also, Van Gogh is my favorite artist. So this, I love that story. So I had to do a project on him when I was in like third grade or something. We were living in England. And so my mom took me over to see some of the paintings while we were not Amsterdam, but and I've been enamored ever since. I went to see some of his stuff last summer and I was just like the dork at the museum, like Van Gogh, like taking pictures of paintings, like people want to see that shit, you know what I mean? Like this will look good later. It's like taking video at concerts, like no one's gonna watch that, like, but you still do it every time.
I also think Beard's gonna get weird, and I think some people who normally wouldn't do drugs are gonna do drugs.
Hell yeah.
Love that.
Hell yeah.
Higgins. Oh, I want to see like a weed brownie Higgins.
I'm just the description for the episode mentions like a friendly match, so they're going over there essentially for an exhibition or something like that, but I'm actually curious, like the on team stuff, you know, the team adapting after Zava. And I guess our last patron question, Mac Lindsay said, do we think the whole team will be training with Jamie and Roy by season's end, and hypothetically will this hypothetically be what causes the team to win the Premier League? I think the Jamie and Roy thing is just Jamie and Roy. I think that's a bond between them, but I am hoping, I do think we will get some sort of soccer action, and I am hoping to see like the Jamie from the Signal, that episode. I'm hoping to see some more of that guy and some really taking command. And I'm just looking forward to everything about this episode, and then I really hope it is on screener before before Tuesday, because I don't want to wait.
I know.
Can we give a quick shout out to our guy Isaac McAdoo, who has just been so, he had one, the great line this week where it's like, no video games before bed, mm-hmm. unless it's Animal Crossing, because it's fucking relaxing. But my guy is a certified babe. He is.
He's looking good.
He looks good. Isaac, you're looking good, my guy. Pull a bikini.
I do want to say, like, a request for the rest of the season. I'm hoping that we get more, especially with Zava leaving, get more of our guys from Richmond. It has been a very light Sam season.
He's going to be captain, right?
If Alex's Wasn't theory the is trailer? True, it is about to be a very heavy Sam season. But we've gotten very limited Isaac. We've had some Colin stuff, but that's going to come around. But we have a lot of characters who haven't gotten as much shine as they used to be. Danny has been mostly just comic relief.
I know.
I don't hate.
So, I mean, he's great. Everything he says is funny, yeah. But...
Sure.
That would be my thing. Yeah, the rest of the season, yeah. Like this is going to be the last seven episodes we get with these people. So I want to squeeze it all out. I want a little
before
more
the
from
spinoff.
Everyone.
Yeah.
Kyle wants to get the last bit of toothpaste out of that tube.
Oh, I'm
folding down. He's folding down the ends.
Listen, we're
doing
we don't
recommended technique.
We don't throw away the toothpaste until there's nothing in there. Until you cannot get a brush in, but. that is season 3 episode 5. We will be back next week with either on Friday, like this episode is coming out, or we will have it out on Wednesday if the screener gods decide to bequeath us another screener. But Alex, where can the folks follow you?
Twitter at Alex McDaniel. And you can read all the content at ftw.usatoday.com.
And Caroline?
You can find the content where she said and at CW Darnie on Twitter for dog content. And what do we got coming up soon? Well, Ted Lasso content, you know, all the content.
Ted Lasso.
All the tweets.
All the stuff. And if you enjoyed this episode.
Maybe some Lax tweets soon.
Virginia Lax. Go check it out.
Yeah.
If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe wherever you get your podcast, rate and leave a review, support on Patreon, and we will see you in 5 to 7 days. Thanks for listening.